The Football Show on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
So we will be talking to Richard Fitzpatrick, Spanish football writer, about Julian Lopetegui. 138 games, 14 games stint in charge of Madrid. Disastrous rating.
Oh no, it's been how his last 3 months of his own career personally has gone as well, with the World Cup, with what happened with Spain, and now this. It's, Joe.
What I don't understand, and what I'll ask Richard, maybe Lopetegui has clarified the situation or been asked about it since he took the job, is when he agreed with Perez to take over, why he didn't say to Perez,
I know,
grand, I'm in, don't worry about it, keep this quiet until the World Cup's over.
I know.
No public announcements, no leaks, let me get on with the job, yeah. I'm not walking out in the country, it would be too distracting, even if they're not going to sack me, which they did ultimately. Why he didn't feel he had that small bit of leverage? Because it would have made no difference whatsoever to Perez.
No, not at all. None whatsoever.
So I can't understand that.
No. Even to Real Madrid, what would it have made any, realistically?
I mean, maybe Perez felt a certain pressure to get somebody, but yeah. Frankly, the World Cup would have started and taken much of the attention off him.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's very strange. It just suggests a real weakness in Lopetegui's part, or a real sense that he knew this would be the only time in his life he might get the Real Madrid job.
And give up every bit of bargaining.
Everything. Sacrifice.
On the way, yeah.
Everybody's perception of his personality and just jumped at it.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? It is a tough one.
Now, he did do one clever thing, which was get paid £6 million a year, and then his contract was such that he got paid the full three-year contract when he got sacked. So he did make, in 138 days, £18
million. It's not a bad thing, is it?
You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's all about the money for you, Joe, isn't it?
It is precisely all about the money for me. That is true.
What did you think when you heard that announcement from the FAI and the IFA? What was your thought when you heard a joint venture? Or whatever, I can't remember how it was put, but there was a huge or a big announcement being made.
Well, when I heard it, I heard in the same breath it was for a combined bid.
I was thinking, because I heard it without actually that news coming about, I was thinking...
United Ireland.
Are we going to get a United team here? Is it going to happen, Joe?
Well, it's going to happen eventually. Demographics are changing. There's going to be a United Ireland very soon.
Yeah.
It's just a case of how we manage the whole thing. But even just by dint of demographics, it's coming. We don't have time to get in all that now.
I know, but I just... that was sorry, I've gone off...
just a small one.
Off script there, sorry.
It's a difficult one for me to deal with United Ireland in a 20-second link here. Do you mind? Pat Nevin is there. Hello, Pat. Oh, dropped his microphone.
Oh, Patrick.
Stay with us, radio listeners. He's coming. He's coming.
Yeah.
Are you there?
Yeah, it's inadequate. I know. Really inadequate.
There we go.
Pathetic. Thank you. Nice to see you. Nice to hear from you. And it's nice to see you as well.
Yeah, I've not seen you. Well, I've not been on the show with you for a while, Pat. I've seen you at a couple of games here and there. But yeah, this is the first time in a while we've been on together.
Yeah, I can't even remember which games were.
I saw you at Palace Everton last week. Palace Everton was the one I saw you at last weekend, yeah.
Which was a brilliant 10 minutes of football.
Yeah, I heard you talking about it. I think it must have been the weekend when I heard you talking about it, saying that you were at Man United and Chelsea on the Saturday and you were at Everton and Palace. And between the two, I got actually a good game of football along those sort of lines anyway. I heard you saying that was actually very good, yeah.
Yeah, between the two, I also DJed for 4 hours overnight.
Ah, that was the one I heard, yeah. It was, you were on with the lads, actually, yeah. They were talking about the piece in the mail. It was you and Johnny Ward.
I know.
Yeah, it was me, yeah. There you go.
He does listen.
There you go. So I presume you were looking on at Spurs Man City last night and all this moaning about dodgy pitches and thinking, in my day, kids, in my day.
No, absolutely. It's quite interesting to see them try to play that style of football and that type of pitch. And quite clearly they couldn't, which is really intriguing. I'm not going to moan on and say, they've got it so lucky today. But it's interesting to watch them playing, you know, really smart, sharp, almost tiki-taka, fast football, but then try and play it on something as bobbly as that. And by the way, it was quite bobbly, not ridiculously bobbly.
Yeah.
And it was really bordering on impossible to play that type of pacey game, particularly for Manchester City. I mean, they still win the game and they still get classy players, can do skillful things, but their actual game. And it just tells you, well, why didn't teams do this in the past? Well, because you probably couldn't for like 90% of the season, because you need a really good surface to be able to do that.
I was just going to say, I mean, we talk about so many things. We talk about tactical evolution and the fitness of players. We sometimes mention the pitch in that sentence, but maybe don't fully appreciate that actually the pitch is really, 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 really bloody important.
Exciting football. Brilliant. Pat was part of some exciting sides and played some exciting football himself, but you didn't get that real style, the style that we're seeing now. And clearly it's a hindrance to players in those times,
No, it was really interesting. I'll
tell you something I did
when
I was at Chelsea. At the end of the second season, and the pitch was honestly, and I know it sounds like a cliche, but it was a potato field. It was an absolute joke. And the chairman said, oh, you should be able to do that, Ken Bates. And I said, I'll tell you what, why don't you come down with me and have a look? So he walked down with me onto the pitch, and I said, he goes, well, show me. And I just rolled a ball across the ground. And it must have leapt up about 3 feet. So it went along the ground, just bounced up in the air. And he went, okay, then we'll water it. I couldn't believe it. And it, to be honest, at the time, I didn't understand it at the time, well, why you didn't just relay it, you know, once or twice a season. You know, it cost a certain amount of money, but if it got you to, you know, get enough points to get into Europe or whatever, it was worth it. But it was, most of the pitches were dreadful then. Just the technology wasn't there.
Yeah. Was that the done thing around then, Pat, was it? Because I only remember maybe early 2000s when sides would have been relaying pitches. So was there any sides doing it around, what, the 80s, relaying pitches?
Only when absolutely necessary. Yeah. And of course, I was just ahead of my time. I just thought it was such a logical, sensible thing to do. Because, you know, I knew there was the possibility to do it, because I remember Wembley used to be relayed once or twice.
Right.
You know, and you thought, oh, so that actually can be done. The other thing, like now you can grow grass a little bit more throughout the year because of those, you know, those special lights they've got, et cetera. So that makes a difference. And there's lots of other reasons why it's better. But it was really intriguing to watch those players. I really enjoyed watching that game last night purely to see who was capable of coping with it. And of course, David Silva was, no surprises there. But a number actually weren't. They couldn't play it. And to be honest, Mendy looked as if he'd never seen anything like it in his life before.
Yeah.
He was just all over the place. And the miss, that was a bit that I was shouting at the television. I don't know if you were the same, Kev.
Yeah.
But the miss was at the Spurs one near the end.
Lamella,
And, you know, I didn't even need to see replay. I knew exactly what happened there. I knew it hit his shin. And you always get a line of, oh, he should have scored it. Yeah, good luck you when the ball smashed across the ground and you're trying to hit it with your foot and it hits off your shin. It's really tough one. So I didn't blame Lamella at all there.
I wanted to ask you about Anthony Martial. We talked a little bit about Spurs City already. So I'm trying not to prattle on for too long here. Various people are talking about him a lot lately. So Graeme Souness on Sky was saying he thinks Martial and Pogba, if they were both on their game, could be Manchester United's best players. And Matic came out yesterday and just said he needs more confidence, talking about Martial. Sometimes I don't think he understands how good he is. If I had his ability with the ball and I was as quick as him, I wouldn't pass to anyone. I'd score in every game. And then he was asked if senior players like himself have told Martial just how good he can be. He said, the manager speaks with him about it. I have told him once. And then Gary Neville did a pretty interesting analysis of Martial. I'll summarise it for you. So he's basically talking to Neville about watching Martial, saying he's watched the last 5 games and he's watched him at Old Trafford. He said, I've had an incredible view of Martial, watching him closely, thinking how you'd play against him as a right back. And is this guy worth fighting for? So he said, fans are torn here. He says, there's never been a player in the last 10 years at United that I've been more confused by in terms of what he is. And he goes on and talks about various bits and bobs. So he says, basically, he looked at the stats, and Martial, in terms of minutes played and assists and goals, is actually up there with the likes of Mane and even Hazard at times. His stats are really, really good. And so he was saying, the best players I played with, they caught me. So as I was looking to see where the player was, the minute I looked back towards the ball, they would be gone. Martial doesn't get that. He doesn't know where to be, when to run at the right time. He hasn't got any timing in his off-the-ball runs. What Martial tends to do is wait and wait and hangs out wide. He needs to change that. That's the difference between him scoring 10 to 12 goals a season and 20. He very rarely does it. He says it's a tough run to make. The run he was talking about was the run between the right fullback and the centre half. So he says it's a tough run to make and you don't always get the ball. But he says, when you look at the stats equivalent to a full season of Martial, he's actually matching the likes of Mane and Hazard in terms of minutes played, goals, assists. And that's incredible. So Neville said, then I said to myself, what am I watching? It's confusing me even more because they're incredible stats. And then he came to the conclusion, finally, that Mane runs 2 kilometres more than Martial a game. And then Hazard, who Neville says gets accused of not working, is doing 1.5 kilometres more than Martial. So Neville's point was, and I really wanted to put it to you guys as wingers, that Martial actually doesn't know what the hell he's doing out there from a run point of view. And Neville's feeling, and Souness's feeling, I suspect, is if this all clicked with them, as well as the confidence, we could be looking at a phenomenon here, or certainly someone who'd be at United for a decade. So I might get your thoughts, Pat, and then Kev can chip in.
Well, can I edit that down to a sentence?
Well, no, because that makes me look like an idiot.
Yeah, Joel, that was, yeah.
Which is, he's playing in the left wing, and he's a centre-forward. He is a centre-forward. He's a 10 as well. Watched him all the time when he was over in France. He's absolutely brilliant in that position. And then you go and stick him out in the wing. He's not a winger. He doesn't think like a winger. He's got the capabilities to be quite good in that sort of position. But he's not a winger. Mm. So he's relearning a position that he knows just about the square root and nothing about. So it's no surprise that he's... And you get much less of the ball when you know wide areas. You compare that at the times I watched him. I was absolutely and utterly gobsmacked for him in France. I thought he was amazing. Unbelievable. Walk into any team just about. But you've got to play him centrally. He's never got a sniff centrally for Manchester United. There's your problem. Mm. All the other stuff all comes from the fact that you've got a guy playing. It's like saying, oh, you're a really good player, Pat. Go and play at left back. Eh? Mm. I'm not great at that position. You know where you're quite good at. You know, and absolutely, Martial, the bottom lip was out at the start. And you look at him now, and he's trying a bit more. But he knows that's not his position. He'll be sold if he gets sold one day. He'll go to some German team, play centre forward, and score 30 goals. He's that good. He is brilliant. You're absolutely right.
Pat, is this a case? I know obviously Van Gaal signed him, but is it a case with Martial that Mourinho has the reputation of this very good defensive-minded coach? Everybody out of possession, get yourself back into position. We've seen it a little bit with Alexis Sanchez, maybe even Marcus Rashford to an extent. Is it a case with Martial as well that it's concentrate on what you do when you don't have the ball, your ability will take over, rather than actually something that Pep Guardiola would do, teaching them to make these runs, to get themselves in advanced positions, to get themselves in goal-scoring positions as well. Is this the huge difference between a Mourinho and, say, a Guardiola or a Klopp, or whoever it would be, that's more of an attack-minded coach?
Yeah, but, well...
Or is that too simple, that?
No, I think you're absolutely on to the point. As I'm explaining... what I think if Martial's out of position. But if you move him 20 yards up the park and he doesn't have to go back, you mentioned Hazard there. Hazard this season is playing 20 yards, 30 yards further up the park because they're playing in a different system. We've got a left midfielder between him and the fullback, so he doesn't need to do that job. So it's not the fact you have to run further. It's when you get the ball, you've got the ball in the last third and you get fewer people to beat in a little bit more space. Now, in actual fact, like Thierry Henry before him. Now, he's not the similar type of player to Thierry Henry, but in that position, he played as a left attacker, a pure left attacker. He'd be brilliant, but he's not. He's been asked to play quite often in a 4-2-3-1, so you're kind of having to go back and cover spaces. And I think it's as simple as that with him. If you put him one-on-one with people, okay, so it's out wide. He'll still be able to do that. That's not a winger's job. A winger's job is to do the whole side, usually. Kev, you know more than most because you play wing-back a lot. You've got a full-back, you've got somebody overlapping, you've got a whole bunch of jobs. Take them away from him and play him as an attacking player purely, and he'll be absolutely brilliant. And if you look at Jurgen Klopp, as you mentioned, what's he doing with Mo Salah? Well, Mo Salah does go back, but very infrequently. I don't know if you looked at the stats for last season, not just his goals. The highest player up the field for Liverpool last season was Mo Salah. Wasn't a centre forward, wasn't over the other side. It was Mo Salah, averaged over the entire season. So you need to play him as an attacking player just about the entirety of the time, and he'll be fine. You get that with Jurgen, you get that with Pep, you get that with Sarri. You don't get that with Jose.
Yeah, because if ever there was a time he would get a decent chance to play centrally, it would be when he's dropped Lukaku, who hasn't scored in 8 games and then 9 at the weekend. And Martial seems to be in a decent headspace and still Mourinho didn't do it.
Yeah, I was asked about it before the game. People were saying, oh, Lukaku's dropped. And I thought, well, yeah, good. You've said my piece about Lukaku over the years, and you know, it's the work rate, that's all it is. So if the work rate's not up, you're playing with 10 men, and if he's not scoring the goals, so yeah, he's left out. And everybody immediately said Rashford up front, and I thought, hey, wait a minute, surely Martial up front, you know, or both of them spelling it. And I think that's what they kind of tried to do for a period, didn't they? You know, if one was central, the other one was wider, and they tried to make it work like that. You know, it's one of those ones where he would like it on his own. And by the way, he's a false nine, as well. Martial, he's really good at that. Mm. Because you're playing French football, you know, they are really quite technical in their tactics as well. And many times he was nominally the nine, but he played that bit deeper and confused the living daylights out of the defences. So it would have been good for him. But, you know, that happens sometimes. Right player at the wrong club at the wrong time. Mm. And it may well be, you know, even though his figures are good, as Neville was saying, yeah, they are good. They should be much better. And they would be if he was playing in a system that suited him.
Mm. It's a pity. It feels like great ways, Kev.
It does. I'm with Pat, what Pat's saying there. Sometimes you see him, absolute dynamite. We're just seeing it too infrequently. We're not seeing it enough. And he becomes isolated in games, particularly, you know, if, and it's mentioned by Neville, saying if he's not scoring, what's he doing contribution-wise? And I just think he's, I think he's the typical player that would have come through a system, and Pat's touched on it there, where his sole purpose was to run with the ball. He doesn't have any sort of responsibility defensively. And his pace would have been the one, the big thing that would have been able to get away from players. And now all of a sudden, you get double marked. People start to figure you out a little bit. How do you take your game forward? What do you do have to do differently? And during the piece that Neville was talking about, he spoke about Cristiano Ronaldo, early Cristiano Ronaldo, with the movement that he was making. Ian Robin was another one he spoke about. The one I was screaming at him when he was actually saying those things was Raheem Sterling. Because Sterling, I would imagine, was a similar type of player coming through the system, beating players for fun. Sole responsibility of you go and score goals, you go and create goals. No responsibility defensively. He would have been able to run away from youth team players, run away from even professionals when he's getting up to professional level. Mm. And then you have to find a different way when you kind of get figured out a little bit. And I think Martial, it's pointed out by Neville, is still only 22. So how is he going to take his game forward now? And Sterling has done it. Now that's with the guidance of a brilliant coach in Guardiola, and what he's doing with his with him off the ball. How are you going to get yourself between the middle of the goals? How are you going to get yourself scoring goals? And he has that ability to do it now, and he's starting to make more movement off the ball. He's creating more chances and more goals. So that's something that Martial, now whether or not he's going to come with Mourinho, I don't know, but that's the sort of thing now he's got to start maybe watching videos of himself. How's he going to develop his game going forward? That's the way I would see it.
Because I presume he could learn those runs, Pat, no? Or is it too instinctive?
I think Sterling learned them, so yeah.
Yeah. Sterling's, I don't think it's overcomplicated with Sterling. If you watch him and all the tap-ins he gets huge amounts of tap-ins. And he quite simply has been told by the manager, see, when the ball's not at your feet and it's going down the other side, just get between the posts.
Yeah.
If it lands at you, you'll score. You know, tap-ins are as good as a 30-yarder. You know, at the end of the season, we were talking about the numbers of goals scored. And he's really taken that on board. I would say it's a wee bit easier for Sterling because you don't need to think. You use that lightning pace and you just go in a direct line.
Yeah.
Maybe a wee bit harder for him. He's got good pace, but not Sterling pace. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you there, but I don't know if you would have seen him, of course, when he played for Liverpool, but the amount of times I saw Sterling when he was having poor spells or even towards the back end of his Liverpool career, his movement was always towards the ball rather than run away from the ball. Yeah.
Okay.
And that was the thing that he has developed. He's developed it brilliantly now. He started to do it more regularly as well.
Yeah, no, I love what... I have to admit, when you get things wrong, you hold your hands up. When he moved and it was at 50 million quid at a time, and I went, really? You know, he's quick, but, you know, he's not got great footballing brain. And usually that's the sort of player you think, well, probably too late, you won't get it. But he's really grown. He's wanted to learn, and he's learned. And Pep's got massive, massive improvement out of him. So, yeah, it's about a lot of the coaches now. Again, I think we've talked about it before, but a lot of the coaches that used to come in, they come in at the top teams, you know, the star coach comes in, I've got great players, I'll set them up in the system and tell them what to do as in the system. And it never really occurred to them to think, well, these are great players, I'll make them fabulous players.
Yeah.
And of course, we know they're doing it now. Jurgen's doing it now. You know that Pep's doing it, taking phenomenal players, making them even better. question remains if Josie actually does that, or do you need to give yourself to the system? Because his system has always been the thing, hasn't it? He works it well. It's very hard to break. It's been incredibly successful. But does he take a guy on and make him a better player? Well, tell me one he has. There's not that many.
No.
The ones that are improving, like Rashford's improved, maybe you could argue, but he was a young guy and was going to improve anyway.
Yeah. Listen, we're out of time, slightly tighter tonight, Pat, but we'll chat to you next Monday, Arsenal-Liverpool over the weekend and a few more bits and bobs. So thanks a million.
See you then.
Cheers, Pat.
Pat and Evan there. We're going to Spain next.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
And you're welcome back. So it's to Spain we're going. Julian Lopetegui, we barely knew you. Richard Fitzpatrick, Spanish football writer on the line, whose work you'll read in Bleacher Report and elsewhere. Evening, Richard.
Good evening, Joe.
So the least shocking news of all time came through this week. How would you sum up Julian Lopetegui's 138 days in charge?
It was an unmitigated disaster. I guess his project was soiled in sin from the get-go because of the way he left the job as head coach at the Spain national team. He was fired on the eve of the World Cup because he'd allegedly gone behind the back of the Spanish Football Federation and negotiated a deal to take over as Real Madrid coach after the World Cup. So they expedited his position and fired him. So he was on the wrong footing from the start, and he was a surprise choice in the first place because of his caliber. He'd only won position at a club before as a head coach. That was at Porto, and he didn't do well there. He'd done well at the Spain national team coach. He'd gone 20 games unbeaten, but it was only in a qualifying series. So he wasn't really tested, and he'd been fifth or sixth on the list of choices by Real Madrid. And he proved to be unsatisfactory. He went to run in losing four games out of five, and then of course, they got trashed in the Clásico on Sunday at the Camp Nou 5-1. So the writing had been on the wall for going back around 4 or 5 weeks since they lost the Champions League group stage game in Moscow. The noises were very bad, and it was inevitable he was going to go. It was just a question of time.
And how bad were Madrid across those 14 games? What were the big problems? Scoring goals seemed to be one for sure.
It doesn't get there are several reasons, but it doesn't go much beyond this fact that they're not scoring goals. Obviously Cristiano Ronaldo left during the summer, so you take a guy out of the team who scores 50 goals a season, guaranteed a goal a game, less goals, worse results. But also even beyond that, there was a kind of psychological factor. Ronaldo he's a born leader. He's an incredible ego, chest out, unshakable self-belief. That is missing from the team. There's been a kind of hysteria around the club over the last couple of months in his absence. So that's a huge factor, the psychological and the football elements of losing a player of Ronaldo's caliber. And the big mistake the club made was they didn't even make an attempt to replace him. There's a lot in this, but basically they bought in a second-rate striker, Mariano. He was an old U-team player at the club. He returned for $23 million. He's a decent striker, but he's not at that level. The President Florentino Perez was holding on to his money in an effort to get Neymar. He tried to get Neymar during the summer, failed, and he's hoping that he'll be able to get him next summer. So that has been a big problem.
Yeah, Richard, sorry, it seemed to me like it was doomed to failure at the start when he actually was appointed. You said there he was fifth or sixth choice on the list of managers that they actually wanted. So, I just said, why did Real Madrid appoint him? What was in their thought process by appointing him when they did over the summertime?
That it's an excellent question, because we have to rewind the clock. What happened was 5 days after the Champions League final, Real Madrid had just won their third Champions League title on the trot. And then there's this huge surprise. Zinedine Zidane steps down as coach. Nobody was expecting this, least of all Florentino Perez, the president. He's a guy who's used to getting his own way. The games he plays, he normally sacks the coaches. The coaches don't tell him when they want to leave. So this was unprecedented in his reign. The only other coach who left, ran out his contract, was Mourinho, but that ended badly as well, that 3-year tenure. So Perez was caught on the wrong foot. He was surprised by this Zidane exit. So he rushed out to get a coach. He was phoning around all the top coaches in Europe. He eventually hits on Lopetegui, who's in Jorge Mendes' stable. And he wanted to get him in before the World Cup started, just in case it didn't work out with Spain during the World Cup. If he failed with them, there'd be egg on his face. So he wanted to make the announcement before the World Cup started. He rushed that through. And then there was the whole episode with the Spanish Football Federation. They were really upset about Lopetegui doing this behind their back, so they fired him. So Lopetegui was on a hiding to nothing. He was replacing Zinedine Zidane, a club legend who just led the club to 3 Champions League titles in a row, and he was operating with one hand tied behind his back because Cristiano Ronaldo left a couple of weeks into the job.
And what kind of personality is Lopetegui? Because it just struck me as such an error in judgment the way he handled the move to Madrid, given that he was what, third or fourth on the list. He may have had a degree more leverage than he might have thought, you know, because they weren't getting their man. For him to not say to them, I will take the job after the World Cup, let's not have any announcement until I'm done with the Spanish job, would have seemed like such an obvious thing to do, and he didn't do that. So right from the off, I was questioning this guy's judgment in a big way. So what kind of character was he over the 14 games?
Yeah, you hint at it there. He was a weak character. He got off to a bad start because of this situation with Florentino Perez, the president, who's a hugely powerful man in Spanish culture. He's on a footing in power terms with the prime minister of the country. He's a billionaire, one of the wealthiest men in the country. He's huge status, and he bullied him into making the announcement. Mm. It was a measure of the man that he didn't stand up for his own position. In the dressing room then, he would have been recognised as a weak character. I mean, you had the farcical situation where Sergio Ramos, the central defender, was taking some of the free kicks and took over the responsibility of taking the penalties. He was trying to, in an effort to blood new players, he was upsetting and unsettling some of the senior players in the squad, playing Dani Ceballos, a young Spanish guy, bringing in Alvaro Aderizola instead of Dani Carvajal, one of the senior members of the squad. So he was upsetting people wherever he went, and he just didn't carry that kind of weight of personality that is needed at a club like Real Madrid. Like, if you compared him to Zidane wasn't a great technical coach, he wasn't great on tactics or that, but he had huge status and he had the ability to make big decisions. For example, when he came in, he brought in Casemiro into the starting 11. This was something Rafa Benitez didn't have the cojones to do when he was in charge. He persuaded Cristiano Ronaldo of the benefits of rest. So Ronaldo rested and came to life then at the business end of the season. He had the status where he could go and drop Gareth Bale for most of last season. This was a huge move because Gareth Bale was signed by the club as a replacement for Cristiano Ronaldo. He was signed personally by Florentino Perez, the president, who never had a good relationship with Cristiano Ronaldo. Bale was his favourite son. So Zidane could make these kind of decisions, whereas a figure like Lopetegui didn't have that power.
Mm. I mean, you spoke about your relationship with the players there, something that maybe I did want to ask you about as well. But in relation to his coaching then, did he bring anything different to the players? What was the message that was coming out from within the camp in relation to him on the training ground?
Yeah, it's interesting. He's from the Cruyff School of Football. He interestingly he played with both Barcelona and Real Madrid in the 90s. He was a reserve goalkeeper, but his thinking is possession based football. If you saw even the stats at Sunday's game, they shared possession 50-50. So he was trying to dominate space, hold on to possession. This didn't really sit too well with the Real Madrid team, which is stocked with star players. They're more used to improvising. So he kind of he crowded their style a bit, and this showed in their performances. They had one marquee performance. They were brilliant against Roma in one of the group stage games in the Champions League. But otherwise, they weren't convincing. So he didn't gel well in that respect either.
We should talk about who might replace him now. It seems as if it's very possible Madrid will go into some kind of state of flux now. Something the club did from a managerial point of view, especially around the rotten end of the Galactico era. There was just managerial change after managerial change. So Conte has been talked about. I'm seeing various reasons why Conte may not happen. Everything from contractual issues at Chelsea to asking for too much money to Sergio Ramos's dislike of him, frankly, and the Ramos comment, "I've always said respect is earned, it is not imposed." That would strike many of us as a clear dig at Antonio Conte. And then there's Pochettino floating around. We don't know how interested he is or isn't. And then Roberto Martinez's name has been linked with the job as well. So talk to us about those candidates and what we know, Richard.
Yeah, it's interesting that you raised that comment by Sergio Ramos. He was asked that after the game on Sunday night against Barcelona. And it was specifically in reference to Conte. The words were along the lines of, would you like a new coach in who rules with an iron fist like Conte? And he picked up on it in his own way, saying, you know, a coach doesn't impose authority like that. He has to earn respect. So he's clearly not a favourite with the likes of Ramos or Marcelo, the senior players in the dressing room at Real Madrid. But Florentino Perez, the president, is desperate to get control back of the dressing room. So he would favour a strong fist like Conte, or Jose Mourinho was very popular with him during his 3 years at the club. So somebody like that who would whip, who would crack the whip, would wrest back control from these senior players who have taken over the dressing room. Whether that would work or not is debatable. Historically, the best coaches at Real Madrid over the last 15 or 20 years have been those with the light touch, the likes of Vicente del Bosque, Zidane, Carlo Ancelotti. But there needs to be some kind of reaction to the drift. The other names you mentioned there, Roberto Martinez, or funnily enough, if they call him Bob Martinez here in the Spanish press, because they think that's what they call him in the British Isles. He's risen to the top of the list now because of these complications in the negotiations with Conte. He would be more along the lines of Zidane, a light touch coach. So that's a possibility. We don't really know, to be honest, though, because they put in Santi Solari. He's a caretaker coach. Traditionally, the Real Madrid have done this a lot when they sack a manager mid-season. Zidane was put in there from within as the reserve team coach. Santi Solari is the club's reserve team coach. So they have to make a decision within 2 weeks whether to keep him. They might hold on to him until the end of the season. That would give them more time to go out to the market and get the manager they want. It was funny that the cover story on Diario AS, one of the Madrid sports papers today, was a picture of Santi Solario, and under it was a headline, the next one for now.
Yeah.
You know, it's only
It has that feel. Mm. The regulations in Spanish football are, if he's the caretaker for 2 weeks, you have to give him the job full time, so he may well get it. I saw Jorge Valdano having a real cut at Gareth Bale in the aftermath of the defeat to Barcelona. We keep looking at Bale because of his price tag, and that has created this illusion that he's some sort of world superstar. But the last 5 years are not reflective of what Madrid paid for him. So maybe in the absence of Ronaldo, the fact that Bale hasn't exactly flourished in that absence has maybe focused a bit of spotlight on him. And I saw, I think it was Sid Lowe at a stat a couple of weeks ago where he was saying Bale has played 200 games now for Madrid, and a lot of his stats are very good, but maybe the most damning statistic is that he also has been unavailable for another 100 games on top of those 200. So Bale is certainly attracting plenty of attention at the moment, it seems.
The wrong kind of attention, yeah. It's very interesting. I mean, Alfredo Relaño, who'd be the most esteemed football writer probably in the country, and the editor of Diario, dismissed him last week as a hypochondriac. He's got a really bad reputation with the Real Madrid fans. It's interesting because he's with the Wales national team, as we know, he's been a really powerful figure. He's the reference point for the team, as they say in Spain. He leads that team, but he doesn't have that personality at Real Madrid, probably because of language and cultural issues. He hasn't assimilated well into the country, so he's been lost at sea. He's like an outsider. He's been riddled with injuries, over 20 during his 5 years or five seasons at the club. People look at him, they think he's got his last jaw. If there's any hint of injury, he'll cry off. And this critically is what bugs Real Madrid fans. The club love a luchador, a fighter. This comes from the days of Di Stefano. They're great heroes were Juanito. They love Isco because he runs a lot. Raul, when he used to play, he used to say himself, he used to run just to be seen to be running. Mm-hmm. That's what Real Madrid fans want. They don't see that fight in Gareth Bale. Cristiano Ronaldo, we were talking about earlier, Bale simply doesn't have that force of personality that Ronaldo has.
Yeah.
He can't lead the team, and he's getting hammered by Real Madrid fans and the press here in Spain as a result.
Yeah. And so I guess one other, in broad terms, so Lopetegui just has not worked. Zidane obviously felt something was amiss, and then we've seen Ronaldo go and he hasn't been replaced, and it seems like the stadium redevelopment, as it tends to do with all clubs, is going to cost a lot of money and maybe impact on what the next manager has at his disposal. So is this squad now creaking? Is it too thin, the Madrid squad, or should they still be really challenging for Champions League and La Ligas, do you feel?
Yeah, it's debatable. Like, Real Madrid came out with a very strong statement on Monday night when they sacked Lopetegui. The main point of which was that there was a disconnect between the squad they have, which is 8 nominees on the Ballon d'Or list, which is a record for the club, and the results.
Yeah.
So they still feel they have a strong squad. But if you look at it analytically, they haven't spent over the last 4 or 5 years. They've, compared to Barca, for example, Barcelona have net spent of 430 or 440 million more over that period than Real Madrid. They haven't bought a Galactico since James Rodriguez. They're without Cristiano Ronaldo. They've got an aging team. If you look at the backbone of that team, which won the Champions League title in Kiev in May, Marcelo, Ramos, Karim Benzema, Luka Modric, they're all over 30. So it needs to be renovated. And interestingly or tellingly, Zidane left a couple of days after a planning meeting he had with the club. He obviously didn't have the stomach to recycle this team. So there are kind of systemic flaws in the squad, and as you mentioned, they don't have the money now because they've just jumped into this big stadium refurbishment project.
Yeah, just one last point. You mentioned Jorge Mendes earlier on and him being a representative of Lopetegui. How much of an influence does Mendes have over Florentino Perez?
Yeah, they have a long time working relationship, so they get business done. There's always been a lot of Portuguese in the club: Pepe, Ronaldo, Quintero, obviously Lopetegui was in his stable as well. So they do business with each other. They have a good relationship.
Yeah, no, that was it. It's just an interesting one when you see that Mendes and his relationship with so many of the top people around Europe, and the influence and the new managers and players that's going into that club.
He does very well, Kev.
He does do well. He does do well. He's not bad, Joe, is he?
Don't worry,
he's not
about
a bad
him.
Agent. He's doing quite well for himself, yeah.
Richard, thanks a million for all that. That's great to fill us in and everything. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.